Well, welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iPharmRx, and today we're going to be talking about medication synchronization programs, or more commonly called MedSync. Poor adherence to medication is obviously a very significant problem, and pharmacists are uniquely positioned, indeed have a responsibility, to assist patients achieve the best possible outcomes from the medications they use. Thus, in addition to making sure patients are on the right medications, we also need to make certain they're taking them appropriately. Now, given that medication regimens have become increasingly complex, MedSync programs have grown in popularity as one means to assist patients achieve greater adherence to treatments for chronic diseases. But do MedSync programs actually improve medication adherence rates? And do they lead to better health outcomes? Well, joining me today to explore these important questions are Dr. Michael Kaczmarski and Daniel Longyear from Geisinger Clinics in picturesque Pennsylvania. Dr. Kaczmarski wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled, Addressing Adherence Problems, Do MedSync Programs Really Work? So Mike, Dan, it's great to have you both on the iPharmRx podcast, so welcome.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you very much for having me.
Stuart, it's great to be here. Thanks.
So, Michael, Dan, I want you to imagine you work for a large health system that provides a comprehensive suite of healthcare services to patients, perhaps the Veterans Administration or Kaiser Permanente or, I don't know, Geisinger. You are acutely aware that less than optimal medication use by patients in your health system contributes to increased long-term costs and avoidable hospitalizations. And based on an analysis of your health plan claim, you've determined that about 11% of your patients who are prescribed an antihypertensive agent never actually pick up their initial prescription. And when you look at the first year after an antihypertensive is prescribed, only 38% of the patients achieve, quote, optimal adherence. And that's defined as greater than 85% of the proportions of days covered. So these data are disappointing, but I don't think they're atypical. You and your team have been charged with finding a solution to this problem. So before we talk about the study you reviewed for iPharmRx today, what are some of the things going through your mind? What additional information would you want to collect about this health system and these patients? And what kinds of interventions would you be looking to implement?
So as you mentioned, Stuart, medication non-adherence, it's definitely a huge health issue that has been leading to preventable adverse events. It's important to kind of think about what's causing the patient to be non-adherent. You know, I don't think any patient wakes up in the morning and says, I'm not going to listen to my doctor today. There's a couple reasons that I've seen, you know, working in an ambulatory care clinic, why patients aren't taking their medications as prescribed. You know, the number one reason that we often see is monetary reasons. So patients can't afford the medications that they're taking. The doctor may want them on a brand name medication. It's been shown to have better outcomes, et cetera, but the patient just can't afford it. So as pharmacists, you know, we may work with them to try to find them better, cheaper, cost-effective alternatives. Other reasons patients may not be compliant is just the inconvenience of the regimen. You know, is it possible that we can work with this patient to get them on a once-a-day medication versus a three-times-a-day medication in an effort to simplify things and improve compliance? Other reasons patient may be non-compliant is side effects. They're fearful of the side effects they may have to the medication. So by sitting down with them and talking with them about the potential benefits and also risks, sometimes we could help persuade them a little bit more to take the medication as prescribed. And lastly, something that we've also seen that has affected medication compliance is social stigmas. A lot of people feel that there's a stigma with, say, taking an antidepressant or starting insulin. They feel like that's kind of the last step and that they are considered extremely sick if they have to take insulin. So sometimes just educational things with the pharmacist can help to improve compliance. And other kind of formal ways to improve compliance is basically using modern day technology. Technology has really been able to be used to our advantage, even in terms of improving adherence. So things such as getting an app on your smartphone, if the patient is more tech savvy, to alert them to take their medication. For the older generation of patients that don't have smartphones or aren't tech savvy, things such as just a simple post-it note, you know, on their kitchen counter or refrigerator, reminding them to take their medication. Some companies are making pill caps that actually have an alarm on them. So when they pick up their prescription bottle, it will alert them or alarm when it's time to take their pill. A lot of services now are coming up with prepackaged, you know, pill containers where it makes it so much easier for patients to remember to take their medication. And last, and of course not least, is kind of where we fit in here in the ambulatory care clinics. And that's through, you know, MTM services, we're able to meet with patients more regularly, once a month at least, and kind of address those barriers to compliance right off the bat.
Stuart, I think what Mike said at the very end there is so important too, because we as health professionals and educators do our best to make sure that when a patient leaves a visit at their physician's office, that they know exactly what they're supposed to be doing with their medicines. But the truth of it is there's so many things that go on at the end of a visit. Patients might not always comprehend what needs to be done because they're trying to process six or seven other things that we're asking them to do. And so they don't hear the message that there's a new medicine there for them to pick up, or it's a medicine that they're supposed to take in addition to the current medicines that they're taking. And so just any type of additional touch points that we can have with patients are always going to be of benefit.
So let's talk about the study you reviewed in your commentary. The study is entitled Impact of a Medication Synchronization Program's on Proportion of Days Covered, or PDC, scores and Medicare Part D medication-related adherence metrics, which appeared in the March-April issue of the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association. Now, for our listeners who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and the key findings?
Sure. So the main objective of this study was really to determine if there was a benefit to a MedSync program in terms of looking at proportion of days covered, or PDC, for three of the most commonly prescribed medication classes. And that was the statin drugs, the blood pressure medications, the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system antagonists, and then also non-insulin medication options. What the study did is that it followed a retrospective cohort model, and it looked at prescription drug claims data over the course of about 2 years, from 2015 to 2017. And they categorized the patient as either enrolled in the MedSync program or not enrolled in a MedSync program. The study looked at approximately 2,400 patients, and their primary endpoint was to look at a change in the proportion of days covered in relation to each of the key medication classes. The secondary endpoint that the study focused on was seeing if the PD score was able to reach at least 80%, as well as looking for changes in pharmacy and medical costs. Overall, at the end of the study, it was determined that there is a statistically significant increase in the proportion of days covered scores among all of the classes of medicine for the people that were enrolled in a MedSync program. There was also a higher proportion of patients that were able to reach that threshold of 80% in the MedSync groups. And then lastly, in terms of the secondary outcome related to costs, whether it be pharmacy or general medical costs, it was shown actually that there is a non-statistically significant increase in costs when we look at the MedSync group versus the non-MedSync group.
So, Michael, let's talk about some of the study strengths and weaknesses. Many adherence studies use the medication possession ratio, or MPR, to measure adherence, and other studies use the proportion of days covered, or PDC. So what's the difference between these two measures, and is one more accurate than the other? Do you feel the results of the study have external validity?
Sure. So that's a really good question about addressing the difference between the MPR and the PDC, because some studies may choose to use one or the other. And one main difference between the MPR and the PDC is that the MPR can be skewed if a patient is filling their medication early. So the ratio actually could end up being greater than 100%. PDC, on the other hand, is capped at a maximum of 100% for a compliance rate. So it's more accurate because it eliminates the possibility of being unreasonably elevated. Another difference between the PDC and the MPR is that the PDC can be applied to a regimen that involves multiple medications, as most patients are on, whereas the MPR can only be applied to one drug at a time. And it's also important to note that the PDC is actually what is preferred by the Pharmacy Quality Alliance versus using an MPR. So in terms of the study using the PDC versus the MPR, I do feel like that makes the results seem a little bit more valid. However, one important thing to realize with the study is that the patients that were looked at in this research were already very compliant patients. So in terms of if these results could be applied externally, it may not be the case, since the majority of the patients that have compliance problems weren't actually included in this study.
Stuart, in addition to the kind of the external validity issues that go along with this, is because it came from, you know, a healthcare claims databases, we don't really know what happened as part of the medication synchronization programs that were happening at the pharmacies. And in fact, if you look at some of the scoping review that was published in the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association, it addresses just this. The language that identifies what is considered standard practice for medication synchronization isn't standard at all. In fact, some places are using an appointment-based medication synchronization model where a patient sets up a time, they can come in and talk to a pharmacist to receive their medicines, and they can receive regular reassessments. Others might be simple, you know, robocalls that say, we filled your medicine, please come in to pick it up. And again, the technology that's used and the programs that are out there vary a little bit. There's MedSync, there's Time My Medicines, there's one called Simply My Meds by NCPA. And so we can take this and say, yes, it's going to increase PDC, but we don't really know what was on the other side of that MedSync to know if that had any influence on adherence rates.
So let's turn back to the case scenario. So recall, you've been charged with addressing the poor adherence rates to antihypertensive medications in your health system. And based on the findings in this paper, is MedSync something you would recommend to your health system, and that they make this big investment or pay for it, and perhaps even provide incentives to patients to use it by, say, reducing copays to patients who sign up for MedSync through their network of pharmacies?
Yeah, it's a complex question to ask, because I don't think there's one real answer in that. And it's all the different outcomes that you could assess by implementing a medication synchronization program. You know, if we look at it from the purely the financial standpoint, the fact that medication synchronization programs are helping pharmacies and health plans help patients reach that PDC mark that Medicare values, and it helps kind of catalyze the shift of a fee-for-service model into a value-based model for pharmacy, and I think that's a good thing. The second is patient satisfaction, where if we're talking about whether a patient is engaged in their healthcare or a patient is satisfied with the services that they're receiving from the ambulatory clinic or from the pharmacy, those are all positive effects as well, and so it's worth it. The one part that I think is missing in all of this, and there's been a couple studies that have looked at it, is how do medication synchronization programs affect patient outcomes, whether they be surrogate or long-term outcomes? And from what I could find in some of the reviews, particularly leaning on that scoping review that came out of JAPHA, was that when we start talking about outcomes such as hypertension, it really comes back to the touch aspect of things, where patients that are engaged with their healthcare providers, patients that are engaged with their pharmacists, are going to have those positive effects. And so maybe the takeaway from that is, if anyone is looking to engage this as part of their health system or as part of their pharmacy, it can't be just simply calling a patient to remind them to come in to get their medicines. There needs to be some sort of medication therapy management, some sort of assessment done, comprehensive medication management. That is the point of this. Now, I can't say that that's the answer, because I'm drawing that from my own interpretation of the studies that are here. But I think if any system is looking to integrate this into their system, they need to think about what are the benefits that are going to come out of it, whether it be patient-oriented from a satisfaction standpoint, financially-oriented from star ratings, or from pharmacist satisfaction that they're going to have more opportunities to be working with the patient as part of that value-based care model.
So, Mike, Dan, I want to thank you both for joining me today and sharing with us your thoughts regarding MedSync programs and their potential value as part of a comprehensive approach to improve medication adherence. I think it's clear from your comments that MedSync has a place in terms of improving medication adherence, but I think it needs to be considered in the context of all the other kinds of services that are provided to patients, particularly touch points with patients where we have direct encounters to assess the appropriateness and the effectiveness of the medications patients are taking. Well, what do you think? Should we encourage patients to enroll in MedSync programs, advocate for greater financial incentives to both pharmacies and patients to use MedSync? Is the return on investment worth it? Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts and what tools you use to improve medication adherence in your practice. Post a comment. Only members of iFormerX can post comments and access our resource pages. And you can become a member of iFormerX. It's free, so sign up today. And if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist, I've got great news. iFormerX has partnered with the American Pharmacists Association to offer this commentary and podcast, along with many others on our site, for board recertification credit. To learn more about APHA's Ambulatory Care Board Prep and Recertification Program, be sure to click on the link at the bottom of the written commentary posted on the iFormerX website. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormerX, signing off.